All right, everybody, here we go again for another Tech Doctor podcast. And along with me, as always, is Allison Hartley. How's it going, Allison?
It's going very well on a Sunday evening. I had to pry myself away from Netflix to do this podcast.
But Oh, really?
Yes.
You must have some new and exciting way to watch Netflix, huh?
I do. I got a new little gadget 10 days ago. The new Apple TV fourth generation. I wonder what we're going to be talking about today.
Well, you hit the nail on the head. That's exactly what we're going to be talking about. And we have the most prolific Apple TV podcaster on the planet with us here. Welcome back, David Woodbridge. How are you?
I'm extremely well. And I'm also having, well, a break, but as far as podcasting is concerned, from my Apple TV. It's currently sitting over behind me in my son's toy room. And I'm not podcasting on it for a change. So I'm feeling very relieved at the moment that I can just talk about it rather than demonstrate it.
I'm counting 11 at this point. Is that how many you've done?
Correct. So as of this recording, I've done 11. I've currently got two in the can, so to speak. I'm about to edit those today and they'll be posted over the next day or two or in the past when people listen to your wonderful program. So, but I'm planning on doing about 20. So that's my aim. So I'll have 13 done soon and then another 7 or so coming up.
Wow.
Well, that's fabulous. And we all so appreciate what you do. These podcasts are nice and short and straight to the point, and they teach us all the various nuances of this new Apple TV. But let's back up a bit for those who maybe don't know. And how about telling us a little bit, David, about this new generation, fourth gen Apple TV?
Okay, so I basically got this, as Allison was saying, about 10 days ago. I actually got mine less than that. I got mine about 7 days ago. I can't believe I've still done 11 podcasts, but never mind. So basically with the new Apple TV fourth generation, as of course, it comes in two versions. We've got a 32 gig, a 64 gig. So that's all the boring technical stuff out of the way. Basically, it's two new things, I guess, for me is one, you can run apps on the Apple TV now. So rather than just being a boring old streaming box that accessing movies, TV shows, music, and of course, running streaming services like Netflix and other services, you can now play wonderful apps on them as you can on iPhone, iPod Touch, or iPad. And I should say right up that people are saying, oh, look, you know, it's just another way of Apple generating money and let's sell apps on a new device. It's just the same as iOS. But as a parent who's blind, I have never, ever seen my boys, and we can talk about this later on, interact and engage so much with the new Apple TV, the Siri remote, which I'll talk about in a minute, and also the game controllers, playing games. They're talking about how to use a game, how to actually get up a level and so on. So we'll talk about it in a minute. But as a parent's blind, I think it's fantastic that my boys are now communicating and sharing. So besides playing apps on the Apple TV, you can also, of course, use Siri. And the way Siri works on the new Apple TV, as it does with the Apple Watch, you can't hear it unless you have VoiceOver running because the Siri response is basically text on the screen. So to have it speak back to you, you'll need to be using VoiceOver. But the really cool thing about it is that it really does work like a subset of Siri on your iPhone, Apple Touch and iPad, and of course on the Apple Watch. So you hold down the Siri button and then you say your command, such as what's the weather today, open an app, play music, and so on. The other thing that really caught my attention was you can also say the name of controls on the screen. So if I wanted to go to settings, general, accessibility shortcut, for example, I can hold down the Siri button and say general, and then hold down again and say accessibility, and it's activating every time I say one of those controls on the screen. And that also works inside apps. I can also navigate movies as far as purchased and recent movies and TV shows go. So it's absolutely brilliant from that point of view. And I noticed something the other day when I was doing a demo of it. When you hold down the Siri button, then it will only make the beep sound if you're using VoiceOver. If you're not using VoiceOver, it doesn't make a beep sound at all. It stays very quiet, which is a little bit off-putting. But since I've been talking about Siri and the Siri remote, I probably should just explain to people what the Siri remote actually looks like. So the Siri remote is basically a trackpad at the top of it. So it's a touch screen or a touch trackpad, similar to the trackpad you have, I guess, in a way on your iPhone or your trackpad on your MacBook or even the Magic trackpad, for that example, using the Bluetooth version on your iMac. And you can flick left and right, up and down. You can double tap. You can click on it. And, of course, it's all accessible with VoiceOver. And then smack bang in the middle of the Siri remote, you have five buttons. So on the left-hand column, going from the top to the bottom of these three buttons, you have the menu button, which causes to go back, or, very importantly, when you're setting up the Apple TV, it won't come up talking with VoiceOver. So you do need to press that menu button three times to have VoiceOver come on and speak to you. Below the menu button, we have the Siri button that I said you have to hold in. If you're running VoiceOver, wait for the beep and give it the command and then release it. And the bottom button is the play pause button. And then if we come over to the right-hand side, right across horizontally from the menu button, we've got two buttons. The top one is the home button, and the one below it is your rectangular volume up and volume down button. And then below that, you've got a smooth surface, and then smack bang in the middle of the bottom edge, you've got the lightning connector. And that's basically the Siri remote. The Apple TV physically is, I like to say it's a bit fatter. It's grown up a bit. It's a bit chubby. It's eaten too much. It's about probably a third the size height-wise as the older Apple TV third generation. I was about to say the old one. Isn't it amazing that once a new product's come out, our fantastic working well Apple third generation is now considered to be old and out of date now?
Yeah,
only after a week.
Indeed. Really been a week. It's funny when a new product comes out because I really do say, you know, how did I put up with the restrictions on the older version now that I've got this new version and all the wonderful things I can do on the new version?
Well, one thing for me, I find the new version way more accessible simply by the fact that they did some great engineering, and at least with my TV, which fortunately is new enough to allow this, I'm able to press one button on the Apple remote and automatically have the Apple TV turn on the TV itself. And when I put the Apple TV to sleep, that will also turn off my TV. And so with that, it's so much simpler to get started with. I always had to hassle with turning on the TV and setting the correct input to HDMI and going through all those steps. But it's one single step for me with this new one. So I'm loving that.
See, I can't do that. I can adjust the volume of my TV, but I can't turn it. My TV is cheap and just has one HDMI port anyway. So all I have to do is turn it on and it automatically will go to the Apple TV. What I love, though, is that the Siri remote, you don't have to, in order to adjust the volume, I have to have it pointed to the TV. But to do anything else with it, I don't have to anymore. So you're not kind of like waving the remote around and swearing and kind of guessing and hoping that you have the remote pointed at the right, at the TV in the right angle, because it's Bluetooth now. It's paired by Bluetooth. So you can just literally hold on to the remote anywhere really in the room and have it pointing in any direction you want and have it work. I love that.
Sounds like maybe your TV doesn't support that CEC standard.
It does not. And honestly, we've been talking about a new TV anyway, so I will make sure that the new one does support that.
It is an issue if you have an older TV. I have the issue of having an older audio receiver, which doesn't have the capability of doing HDMI, which means I'm going to have to buy a new receiver because the new Apple TV lost the DOS Link audio port.
Now, they make converters that will convert from HDMI to optical, so you should look into those. If you go back into my favorites on Twitter, you can have a whole list of them favorited.
They do, but everyone says they really don't work very well.
Well, that's unfortunate.
No, the one that I did go out and buy a new receiver. And then when I was reading on Twitter, particularly from iMore, I suddenly discovered, and I'm actually doing that now, I can actually AirPlay from my fourth generation to my third generation, which then the audio then goes out through my optical output, through my AV receiver onto my through my television, so I can do it. It's a bit clunky, but it also works very nicely.
But you don't need to do that with your new receiver, I assume.
No, but I sort of had to tell my wife that after I bought our $7 new amp, that perhaps we didn't really need to do that because I could AirPlay from the fourth to the third generation.
Ah.
But she graciously said, it was lovely of her, she said, oh, no, but that's a bit clunky. It's much better having the new one. I said, that's absolutely correct.
Oh, yeah. So I assume with the new one, it's a one button will turn everything on?
Yes, correct. Like yours, I've just pressed one button and the TV comes on. It switches to the right HDMI port and I can start using the new Apple TV straight away, because in our lounge room, our amplifier, Foxtel, X, Y, and Z devices are very complicated. We've got four HDMI channels, and it's a nightmare for me sometimes to try and work out what HDMI channel the Apple TV is connected to.
Yes.
But now, it works really, really nicely.
So that's a big improvement. They've made it simpler, which I think is a really important aspect of it, given especially since it's supposed to be a living room device that anyone in the family should be able to operate. So it should be simple. One of the things that people have really criticized is that remote, and if you're sighted, not being able to tell in the dark which way you have the remote oriented. Honestly, I wish people would just get in the habit of looking for that lightning port on the bottom, yeah, and there wouldn't be a problem. But I've heard so many sighted podcasters complaining about the shape of the remote. And they said, we know the Siri button is indented slightly, but we can't feel that.
Yes, but besides that point, you've got this huge rectangular volume up and down button. So you've got four round buttons and one great big huge rectangular button. So if you can't tell that when you pick up the remote, that rectangular button should be on the bottom right-hand side of the group of buttons, then there's really something wrong with people's tactile sense.
Yeah.
Really? Yeah. I thought it was funny because personally am thrilled with the remote. I like it a lot.
No, it works well. I mean, I've got no problems. I mean, I must admit, sometimes when I pick it up and I'm not paying attention, I will spin it and not pay attention, I guess, to what I'm handling. But, you know, now, since I've had it for over a week now, it's no problem. I pick it up. I check where the volume button is in relation to my, you know, if it's vertically up and down the runway, and then it's fine. So, you know, my boys certainly don't have any trouble with it either.
Yeah, the one thing I will say about it that I think is sort of a legitimate issue is it's very easy to accidentally swipe your thumb across the trackpad when you're watching, yeah, something and cause the show to jump forward.
Yeah.
It was funny just then, Robert, because as we were talking, I accidentally bumped the trackpad. My television started talking in the background.
Yeah. So that's something people are going to have to watch out a bit for. It's also got a lot of glass on it, and I've heard a couple people say they dropped it and broke it.
Although it's really nice. I heard somebody, I think it was Jim Dalrymple, said, really? You dropped something on a tiled floor and it broke? Jeez.
It's a beautiful device, though. I mean, it's just Apple quality workmanship all the way around. And I'm really pleased with it so far. Other people have complained a good bit about the setup, especially about the fact that the on-screen keyboard is set up as one long line of characters. And honestly, that works just about as well for a voiceover user,
yeah,
if not better, than a grid. So I think we won on that one, honestly.
I agree.
Yeah, look, I mean, I must admit, I'm very used to it now. I mean, you literally flick across the row, and, you know, the nice quick tip that I learned when I was doing my demos was the fact that you can press the play pause button to toggle between caps and lowercase.
Right.
And, you know, it really doesn't slow me down. So, it, you know, either when you're entering in your restrictions PIN number or your password or whatever else it is, it really does work really nicely. And, you know, flicking left and right. And, I mean, I guess when you're putting spaces in, the fact that the space is on one side of the whole row next to the left of the A and the delete button is next to the Z, then it's a bit of a while to flick to. But, you know, if you're using direct touch, for example, via the voiceover rotor, you can very quickly swipe over to each edge very quickly and still use the delete and the space anyway.
Yeah, maybe that's one thing we should highlight, is that VoiceOver does feature a rotor, which works much the same way that it does on the iOS devices. It's a little bit small because the keypad area is fairly small, but I didn't find it very difficult to operate, actually.
No, it's very straightforward. I mean, two-finger rotate, and you've got, for memory, explore function, navigate, which is the default for flick left, right, up and down, character navigation, word navigation, the speech rate, which is actually very, very handy, and, of course, the direct touch mode for when you're using the keyboard. So that they all work very nicely. In actual fact, I used the explore and direct touch when I was setting up one of the Twitter apps on the Apple TV to read the web URL, where I had to go into Twitter and enter the PIN authorization code to authorize, in this case, AirFeed, to use my Twitter application feed.
I haven't set that one up. I saw that was one that you had put as a favorite app on Twitter. I guess we'll talk about apps more specifically in a minute, but that is a main feature, is the ability to have an app store and purchase apps. That's one of the big things that separates this fourth gen from the other Apple TVs. And I think Apple's really going to try to move in a direction of replacing what we normally think of as TV channels with TV apps. That's going to be interesting to see how that works out.
That's true, but I wish they would have done two major things in this new version, and it's only software, so hopefully they'll change. Number one, which sort of irritates me as a parent with sighted children, is that because there's only keyboard support, on-screen keyboard support at the moment, my children can hear my PIN number for my rental PIN number, because there's currently no Bluetooth keyboard support or remote app iOS support at the moment. And when I was using those before, all the people, all that my boys would hear on my TV would be bullet, bullet, bullet. Right. But now they hear, you know, 3, 7, 2, 4. But I was talking to a producer on my Talking Tech radio program this morning, and he said, why don't you just have a random PIN number and tie the PIN number to the boys tied in their room? So you say, okay, guys, here's the new PIN number for the day. I'm not going to give it to you until you tie to your rooms. And I thought, that's a fantastic
idea. That's a great idea.
They can listen to the PIN. It's going to be a random number each day, and it doesn't matter if they listen to it for the moment.
Wow. How would you set that up? Would you have to change it each day?
I would, yes. Yeah. But at the moment, that doesn't worry me. I'm very big on my boys only accessing content that I want them to access, and so is my wife. So, you know, if that encourages them more, because I really don't want them listening to my PIN number. I don't want to turn it off, and I don't want them stopping them accessing content either. So I just thought I'd turn it into some sort of, you know, scheduling type thing to say, you know, you do your rooms or you get your lunch ready for tomorrow for school, and then you can have the PIN number. So, you know, randomizing it doesn't really worry. I mean, it literally takes 30 seconds.
Yeah, I guess it would be a hassle, but you could put on a pair of Bluetooth headphones and enter the PIN number.
I could. Now, interesting you mentioned that, because I don't know if Alison or Robbie have tried it either, but the Bluetooth volume, as compared to AirPlay or just coming through your normal, you know, Apple TV, straight TV amplifier, seems to be very low.
I haven't tried it.
Nor have I, but I have actually noticed that AirPlay volume is extremely low. I was AirPlaying Mushroom FM from Utunes onto the Apple TV, and I have really good speakers hooked up to my TV, and I had to crank them. I actually ended up just turning VoiceOver off so it wouldn't shout, and cranking up the speakers, because the difference in any other media that I would play natively on the Apple TV and what I was AirPlaying was astronomical.
I wouldn't be surprised if they've got to do a bit of work on AirPlay, because I believe AirPlay is slightly different the way they're doing it this time. And hopefully they do something with the Bluetooth audio, because even when I was demonstrating it, it was cutting in and out. The volume started off low, it got loud. VoiceOver was ducking over, whichever way you want to talk about it, you know, the music or the other stuff playing. So, you know, it's only version, if you like, 1.0 release. So hopefully as in future updates, we'll fix those particular issues.
What I would really like to see as well is a way to control the volume for VoiceOver independently of the media, because sometimes I'll have media turned up a bit and then it'll stop and VoiceOver will just blast through the speaker.
That is an issue, and it has been in all the generations of the Apple TV that have had voiceover.
The other issue, particularly when you're setting it up, is there's no indication with the third generation, voiceover would always come on and ask you, I think it was to press the power button or the menu button three times. I can't remember now, voiceover on. It doesn't do that anymore. So you're sort of sitting there going, are you going to talk?
Mm-hmm.
Are you going to talk? And then all of a sudden you think, oh, I've got to press the menu button three times to turn on voiceover. So I don't know if that's intentional, but I just wish there was still an audio indication to say, if you require the use of voiceover, please press the menu button three times.
That would be nice.
That's how it works on the Mac, but I don't believe the iOS devices do that either, do they?
No, they don't.
No, I think we're just getting spoiled.
Well, I suspect that this may be something, you know, I'm pretty sure that tvOS is a pretty close second cousin to iOS, and so I'm not too surprised.
Mm, absolutely, yeah. I mean, look, these are tiny little things that, you know, when I had a conversation with Apple last week and I was going through my list that I've got here about some of the issues that I've had, I kept saying, look, these are really small, minor issues compared to all the advantages that I get out of the new Apple TV. These are very, very minor issues.
They really are.
Yeah, and absolutely.
Especially with version one, nothing that you've mentioned would discourage me, and I hope would discourage anyone else. Because today, for example, I was able to go on Netflix and watch a very nice Keith Richards documentary with audio description, and it was easy to get started, easy to pause, easy to step back a little bit if I needed to. You can simply tell Siri what did they say and Siri will jump back 15 seconds, or you can tap lightly on the left side of the trackpad and the TV will jump back 15 or 30 seconds, whatever it is. And all that just works seamlessly, and it's very, very fast. There's no lag in the processing of those commands, which really makes it smooth. It's very nice, I think, for a 1.0. And honestly, I think the voiceover support, in spite of the things that we've mentioned that we're not thrilled with, is really quite mature, just like it was when the watch first came out.
Absolutely. No, it's working really nicely. Although I must admit, I still haven't managed to get Netflix audio description running yet here in Australia. But I believe from what I've heard on Twitter, and you folks can correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe if you get Netflix to enable it, that means any movie that has got audio description tied to it will come on regardless of whether you've got your audio description enabled or not. Is that the case?
Yes, that is the case. And every profile on the account will have audio description. So that has been a showstopper for some people.
Well, but you can turn audio description on and off. When my wife watches something on Netflix and we're using the same account, she just goes and flicks it off on her iPad and she doesn't have audio description. But then when I want to watch a show, I just need to turn audio description back on.
Now, is that done on the Netflix app on the Apple TV, or do you need to go to your iPhone to turn it back on, for example?
It's done on the Netflix app on the Apple TV.
Okay, well, I might have a look because, like you were saying, Alison, that thing about, because I heard that everything was going to be on, I thought, you know, audio description will basically, you know, make my wife and my boys go absolutely crazy because they hate audio description.
Yeah, in the audio tab on the Apple TV, the audio description option actually doesn't appear until Netflix enables it on your account. But as soon as they do that, you can turn
see,
it on.
Oh, see, I didn't bother checking with both of us being blind. I didn't bother checking to see if it then appeared once they enabled it. And that's interesting.
Yeah, in fact, for me, it was the opposite. Even though they enabled it, it still didn't work for me until I went in and enabled it. So yours happened to be enabled, but mine was disabled.
Hmm.
Okay. Now, do you happen to know whether we can do that independently? Can we go and log into the Netflix account on the website and enable it ourselves, or do you have to specifically talk to Netflix to?
No, it's something that their research department has to do. They have to make the change on your account from the Netflix support.
Okay. Fantastic. Yeah, because I've actually been missing my Netflix audio description.
Well, and the customer service is very hit or miss. You have to tell them specifically to refer to help article 32751. And I know that some people even had trouble after telling them that. The first time I called customer service, they basically said it's a problem we're working on with Apple. There's nothing you can do. Just wait a week. But then somebody told me about this help article, and I happened to get a really good person the second time who stayed with me and figured it out and was able to eventually get it enabled. But some people have had to call three and four, maybe even five times, and somebody was even hung up on once, apparently.
You and I were both talking to Netflix at the same time, and at the same moment that the guy I was talking to was turning it on for me, someone was telling you, can't be done. Apple's going to have to fix it. So it's so interesting. It's the Netflix is not consistent.
No, they have to have some education, I think, corporation wide.
Yeah, you can turn it on. Now, it will be on for everybody on the account until you specifically turn it back off. But they led me to believe, or at least I think they think, you can't turn it on and off once they've temporarily enabled it, but you can.
That's good.
Good news.
We touched on it briefly, but one of the big complaints a lot of people have had, and I think it honestly mostly has to do with the on-screen keyboard, which we've talked about, but some people have said the Apple TV is too hard to set up. But one thing I really liked about it was it has this option when you first set it up that lets you put your iOS device near the TV, and it copies over a lot of your settings, your Wi-Fi settings. And for me, it copied over my Apple ID login and password. I don't know how that worked for you all.
I just had to enter it on my phone, I think twice for some reason. But then, that was very easy because I just used the same keyboard that I know and love, the on-screen keyboard, and was able to do that really easily.
Yeah, no, I mind it worked really nicely. I mean, as Alison said, I had to use the login to my Apple ID on my iPhone. It already got my password for my Wi-Fi network. And when I was doing the podcast for it, every time I was halfway through doing it, my boys would pop in and distract me. So I think I having an automatic device installed about 9 times.
Oh, yeah.
6 hours. So I got an expert at doing it by just, I'm basically putting the iPhone on top of the Apple TV.
Yeah.
Straight away and off. But literally, in real life, I'd say you'd be up and going within, less than 5 minutes.
Yeah. The first time I did it, it told me it couldn't process it, but I just tried it again and it went through fine the second time. I suspect when I was doing it early in the week, the Apple servers were quite busy with people setting up their Apple TV, and that's probably why it failed for me the first time, but it went through fine the second time, so it wasn't a big deal.
Come to think of it, I think I got an error the first time too, but yeah, then I just went back and did it again, and it was 5 minutes tops. I was in the App Store downloading Netflix.
Although very weirdly on mine, every time I go and play a movie, or a TV show, because we use family sharing here in my household, and between us we've got about 260 movies or whatever it is. And every time I go to play a movie at the moment, it keeps wanting me to put in my iTunes password.
Oh.
Even though I've specifically had the settings set to say, never ask me for my password. So it's bizarre. So I've got no idea what that's doing. But now that I've installed about 20 apps and my boys have been playing frantically all week and they've got all their scores on all their games, I really, really don't want to go back and reset my Apple TV at this stage and start all over again.
No, that would be a weekend's worth, huh?
Yeah.
It would be, and I think my sons have done so well at, Beach Buggy and Crossy Roads and Nanosaur 2, the dinosaur game and everything else, that I think I get a couple of boys being very cross at me if I say, guys, you're going to start from the beginning again.
Oh, that would suck.
yeah. But that is interesting. It sounds like for whatever reason it's not obeying that setting, and that's odd.
No, and look, I've sent an email to Apple saying, this is coming up and my settings set to never ask me for my password. Why is it happening? And I just hope one of the responses comes back and says, well, you know, you can reset the thing. But, yeah, that should be really only the last resort. I mean, my boys are pretty good. I mean, they always come back up and say, can you put in your password? And, again, the old keyboard issue. So they're very nice. Now they go off to their bedrooms and say,
"Oh,
bedroom with the door closed."
I bet the good news is you've gotten very good at entering your password.
Oh, lightning quick. Absolutely. Yes.
So what do you all think about the app store for the Apple TV and the apps maybe that you've tried? I honestly haven't installed very many yet. I've mostly got hung up on enjoying Netflix, but tell us about it. Either of you, what about these apps?
Basically for me, getting back to the app store itself, I just wish they would add, I mean, at the moment they've got featured, you've got your purchased apps, you've got your top charts, and you've got search. I just wish they would have a couple of things, the apps by category, so you can search properly for games, for utilities, for music, as we do on the iOS store. And trying to find an app at the moment is really, really hard. I believe some people have just been putting in A, B, C, or D as a first letter and then just going through the whole list. But after playing it for a while, I found the apps to be fairly good. When the first app that I played, which was AirFeed, and when it came up and said, you know, please enter in the authorization number by typing in this web address, I thought, oh, no, I can't access that. And I thought, oh, hang on a minute, I've got a rotor. I've got character and direct navigation. So and that was very easy to do. I've played with quite a few now. So I've done AirFeed, which is basically a Twitter feed app. I've done Ticker. And Ticker's actually very nice because with Ticker, it's basically an RSS reader. So you go in there and you can search for or add RSS feeds, and it comes up with, you know, quite a lot of the usual ones such as iMore and Macworld and so on. And you can also select categories, so you can do business, entertainment, and that sort of stuff. So it's actually a very good one to navigate. Carrot Weather, of course, although I find Carrot Weather is a bit odd because it's a talking interface itself, and VoiceOver talks a lot more when you run Carrot Weather, so it sort of decreases from the satisfaction of having Carrot Weather insult you about the weather. Twit TV from the Twit Network, that works really nicely. So to AirPlay, you know, current shows or live shows or current shows, that works really nicely. I've got an app here in Australia which is like a music radio app because there's no default radio or podcast app currently on the Apple TV unless you use home sharing, and then you can get access to your podcasts. So the music I can't remember what it's called now. I think it's My Radio or something like that. Works really well for listening to podcasts and also radio stations. And, of course, Netflix. My boys love Netflix. They also love YouTube, which also works really well on the Apple TV. A couple of times, though, I've noticed, particularly now they've got parental control on, the keyboard for parental control doesn't work in some apps. So when I've gone to run the app and the keyboard pops up for me to put in my parental PIN number, I can't access the keyboard. So that's a bit of a worry. It's only happened in two apps so far, but I just thought, I don't know if that's a software issue from the app developer or part of the software running on the TV, the Apple TV. So I've emailed the developers and asked them what they think the issue might be. So they're probably the most of the apps that I've done so far.
How about you, Allison? What are you doing with apps?
Well, I've used, of course, Netflix a lot. I have iBlink Radio from Saratech that I just sort of played with a little bit this morning. Seems to work pretty well. I got a radio app that I kind of gave up on because it didn't have the station that I was looking for, but I'm going to give it another try. On the YouTube app, I find that it works very well, but I was trying to enter my account, my Google account information, and you have to enter a code from the screen. I was able to read the code just fine with VoiceOver on the Apple TV, but for some reason on my iPhone, when I went to enter it in to activate it, even though I was entering in exactly what the Apple TV was displaying, it was telling me that it was incorrect code. So I have to fight with that a little bit more, I think.
So there are a few things that have been problematic, it sounds like, but for the most part, it's working pretty well, honestly.
Yeah.
It is. And look, what I'm interested in finding out is how many rows of apps on the main screen can you fit? Because I've heard some people say they've now got 60, 70 apps on the screen.
Wow.
Wow.
I just hope at some stage Apple starts to say you can put folders on your Apple TV.
That'd be great.
My current iOS app count now for my iPhone and my iPad, I've got over 2,200 apps at the moment. And I can see myself getting lots and lots of apps for the Apple TV, particularly for my boys. And, you know, at the moment I've only got 8 rows of apps. But, you know, when you get 20, 30, 40 rows of apps on the screen, because it's a 5-column row, then, like I said, I just wish, you know, hopefully because you can actually move apps around and organize them the way you want, that the folder option works the same way it sort of does on iOS.
I'm guessing that it will. Someone said that they had seen the folder option in the code. It might be the next release, but
yeah.
I think it's there. Maybe it's just not turned on at this point.
No, that's right. So hopefully, I mean, that'll be one of the great features. So, you know, the main thing I'm looking forward to is, you know, Bluetooth or remote app support and the folders. And, you know, to me, the rest of the interface, you know, works pretty well, except the only weird thing is when you actually try and ask Siri to play music, she currently says she can't help you with playing music at the moment.
Right.
And that's coming in 2016, I think.
Yeah, that's coming as well. It is odd about the Bluetooth keyboard because you can enable all kinds of other Bluetooth devices. I don't know whether they just didn't get around to it or they felt like no one used the Bluetooth keyboard in the third generation. I did. I think some of
Me
us
too.
Did. But I'm hoping that will come back because I think we were all surprised that it wasn't there.
Yeah.
No, definitely. And look, Bluetooth support is fantastic. I mean, I've got two SteelSeries Nimbus game controllers that my boys love to use with their games. And I can also use it to navigate with VoiceOver as well. It works perfectly well with VoiceOver for navigation as well. And I really love it if some of the developers, I was thinking over the weekend, the kid-friendly software that does all the blindfold type games like Dominoes, wouldn't they be absolutely brilliant on the Apple TV? With
they would be.
I just hope, you know, developers like that or other developers would develop games that, you know, blind people can play, but also maybe games that, you know, sighted children, sighted people can play with their blind or low vision partner, straight parent. Because a lot of the times when I play games with my boys, like I might think, oh, this is a fantastic app, and my boy says there's nothing on the screen,
yeah,
then love to have the opportunity to have both a visual and audio accessible app that I could really play with my boys for the first time on an accessible console.
And I think we should highlight that as far as these set-top boxes go, as far as I know, by far the fourth-gen Apple TV is the most accessible console
oh, yes.
that we've ever had.
That's right. I mean, there's only still only limited support with the Xbox. I believe there's only still limited support with PlayStation as well.
Very limited.
You know, so again, out of the box, Apple has really raised the bar quite dramatically in giving access to not only VoiceOver, but we've also got our low vision options in there as well. And, you know, I wouldn't be surprised, given the fact that it supports Bluetooth, that it would probably, I haven't tried this yet, that would also port switch control for people that have physical motor issues as well.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised. It is interesting that we're going to face the same dilemma that we face with the iOS store. It's great to have all these apps, but now that Apple has opened it up to developers, some of the apps are going to be accessible and some of them aren't. And we're going to have to fight that battle a little bit. And even already, if I'm not mistaken, the Hulu app is not accessible.
Completely inaccessible. I'm so disappointed. I'm paying $12 a month for commercial-free access to Hulu, and I can't use it on the Apple TV. It really torques me off.
And we just don't know yet whether Hulu will do anything about that or not.
Yeah, well, we've all been tweeting them, so hopefully that will accomplish something good.
Actually, it's interesting talking about accessibility. This week in Australia, or last week when we're doing this recording at the beginning of November, the Cricket app for Australia wasn't accessible, and lots of blind people emailed and tweeted Cricket Australia to get it accessible. And within about 3 or 4 days, the app was made accessible so that people could stream the radio broadcast of the cricket. So I'm hoping, you know, we'll get that sort of, probably not as much people grabbing on and jumping on the bandwagon and fixing their apps. But when I did a tweet about my favorite apps on the Apple TV over the weekend, the developer of AirFeed actually contacted me via Twitter and said, if you've got any suggestions to improve the app, please let me know, which I thought was absolutely fantastic.
And you said AirFeed is the Twitter app.
That's right. That's the Twitter feed app. So at the moment, it appears it only does your timeline. So I'm going to email him, or probably tweet him this week or so, and say, wouldn't it be great if I could also check my mentions and maybe also check my favorites? Because I tend to use Twitter as a way of keeping all my favorites, particularly from a radio program. And just sometimes it's just nice to sit on the lounge. And I've noticed over the last week or two, it's just nice to browse on the Apple TV, which is my version of, you know, grabbing the lounge and saying, this is my television for the time being. Everybody else go away.
Right. So you've actually enjoyed using Twitter, and it sounds like the RSS app as well. I hadn't really thought about using apps like that on the TV, but it sounds like it works for you.
Oh, it does. Both the Mashable app and the Ticker app works really nicely. And when you're reading an article and you want to read it back again, you can just hold down the play pause button on the Siri remote, and that does the two-finger flick up gesture, if you like.
Nice.
And that rereads it. So again, I can go, you know, flick down the screen and go, no, that sounds boring. No, that sounds boring. And then when I get to one I want to read, I just hold and press the play pause button and listen to the article. So it's a great way of almost just skimming stories that I can then go back and favorite later on.
Yeah, I've got Mashable in my RSS reader that I use on the phone. And wow, they produce lots and lots of articles every
day. Yes, they do.
They do, and it's a bit hard to keep up to date. So I just tend to flick through, and if anything grabs my attention, I tend to favorite it.
So you flick through and you can hear the headline, and then if you want to hear the article, you can click the trackpad on it?
Correct. That's right. And if you wait long enough, it'll actually start reading out the article automatically because it's appearing on the screen. But, you know, I'm a typical screen reader user. I don't want to wait. So press and hold the play pause button and starts reading straight away.
So anything else that either of you think we should let people know about?
It has been the best investment I've made in terms of spending a couple of $100 on a device in a while, and I've gotten hours upon hours upon hours of use of it already in the 10 days or so that I've had it. So I can only imagine that as the OS continues to mature, that's just going to increase.
Yeah, you and I both got the $200 one, the 64 gig, just because we know that we can never have enough storage on our devices.
Right.
But I'm guessing for a lot of people, if you're not a gamer especially, the 32 gig for $149 might be very adequate. The problem is we don't know what the future is going to bring.
Right.
No, that's right. And look, I've got the 64 gig version too, and I know one of the support articles on the internet says, you know, if you're a gamer and a less of a streamer, then get the 64 gig. If you're more of a streamer than a gamer, then get the 32 gig version. And I got the 64 because, you know, my boys want to play games. I guess the only thing I want to comment on, two things, just in finishing, is I guess the cell coordinate stuff took me off guard when I first did it, because it's not too bad when you're on the home screen. So it says, you know, settings, row 2, column 2 or something like that. When you get into the settings, though, when you hear something like vision voiceover 1 of 2, and you think, oh, is there a second option for voiceover? But what it's really saying is that there's two options for vision. There's voiceover and there's Zoom.
Yes.
So, you know, that I guess initially that put me off, particularly when some of them say, you know, setting XX 1 of 1. You think, oh, so do I click on that to go into something, or is there only one option? So that initially put me off. The second thing I've noticed is that some of the other voices, so here in Australia, the Karen voice is fine, but I've actually switched my region and heard the Daniel voice, and the Daniel voice is a little bit off-putting. And I just wish, to some extent, Apple would have put in the ability to be able to choose what voice you would like to listen to. I'd love to listen to Alex on my Apple TV because I use him all the time on my Mac.
That'd be great.
That would be absolutely brilliant. So, but, you know, again, it's a 1.0 release, so hopefully the stability of voice will improve. But look, overall, I'm really happy with my Apple TV. It's funny, Rob, when you were saying the prices, here in Australia, it's nothing like that sort of price here in Australia. I think my 64 gig version cost me $370.
Wow. That's unfortunate.
Yeah, it is.
The 32 gig version, I believe, is 270. So it is still very expensive, and I believe you can still get the other Apple TV, the third generation, still for the time being. So when people ring me up on the help desk at Vision Australia, I tend to say, look, if you want to just keep streaming content, third generation's fine. If you do want to use Siri or you want to start using apps on the television like a smart TV, then go for the Apple television fourth generation.
Yeah, the third gen is really cheap here. I believe they're now selling it here for $69.
Yeah.
So you can't beat that if you just want to get into it. And it does have a lot to offer, but it's a different approach than this fourth gen with all the apps. So it kind of depends on, like you said, what you want.
I can honestly say, because it's building on iOS, the transfer of navigation and knowledge about what to expect from the interface was really transferable from me using my iPhone, my iPad, and my iPod Touch straight over to using the TV OS. I mean, you know, flick left and right, click rather than double tapping with VoiceOver, the rotor. I mean, everything about the interface and VoiceOver navigation was just so similar to iOS that a set of people, if you're already used to using VoiceOver on your iOS devices, there's going to be no issue navigating the Apple television.
Exactly. I didn't feel like there was really any learning curve much there at all. I just started using it and it was very natural.
I'm currently having some conversations with some people at the moment, and I'm going to be tweeting some of their comments over the next couple of weeks about using the Apple TV with the screen magnification, bolded text, high contrast, or sorry, just the contrast, reduce contrast and reduce motion. That's going to be very interesting. So hopefully there will be some YouTube videos coming out from low vision folks to show us how all the low vision stuff also works on the Apple TV as well.
Yeah, that'd be great because I haven't heard much about that so far.
No, for some reason, I always find people who are blind seem to do a lot of audio podcasts, but I don't know many low vision people that actually do video or YouTube style podcasts on low vision interface type navigation, whether it's for, you know, Android, iPhone, Mac, PC, or anything else. So I'm just hoping that because this is the first time we've actually had a proper screen magnifier on a streaming box, that someone will actually do some low vision videos. I'm really looking forward to that.
We'll have to get our friend Shelley Brisbane on. I know she got an Apple TV and she's a low vision person.
Yeah.
So we'll have to talk with her on the podcast and see what she's finding.
That'd be brilliant.
All right, you all, I think we've covered it pretty well, and I want to get this one out fairly quickly so that people can hear the exciting news. And it's always great to have you here, David. Thanks for coming back, and we love it when there's a new product we can get together and talk about.
Yeah, thank you, David.
That's okay. And if people want to catch up with me, they can just stick in David Woodbridge and listen to my podcasts in iTunes, or you can certainly feel free to follow me on Twitter, and that's at D. Woodbridge on Twitter.
Excellent. And Allison, what if someone should want to get in touch with us? What should they do?
Well, if they should want to, and they should because we're awfully lonely, they should send an email to techdoctor@dr-carter.com. That's techdoctor@dr-carter.com. And a voicemail number is forthcoming. I have identified a voicemail provider who should be able to set us up with a voicemail number so that the lovely listeners can call in and we can hear what y'all sound like. So hopefully that will be coming in the next week or two.
Excellent. And I want to congratulate you on how well you did that email on the very first try.
On the very first try. I've had to edit that. I can't tell you how many times the last time I was editing one of the podcasts, I messed up about three times before I got it right.
Well, you got it this time. That was fabulous. And this is Robert the Tech Doctor. And for now, I'm going to say so long until next time.
And this is Allison the Tech Doctor saying bye, everyone.
And I probably should say, and as always, thanks for listening and bye for now.